And good afternoon, Juneau. It's time for a Juneau Afternoon. This is Ben Brown. I'll be your host today, Thursday, the 2nd of July. A quick look at the weather. It's raining. On this afternoon's Juneau Afternoon, Toby Harbanek will be here about his first Friday exhibit at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, combining photography and furniture. We'll learn more about this weekend's upcoming new old-time Chautauqua. We'll also speak with author Amy Kittlestrom about her new book on the religion of democracy. Elizabeth Jenkins will share a preview of a new monthly radio program, Reveal, and we'll hear about art happenings here in Juneau during Arts Up, along with Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. This is Thursday afternoon's Juneau Afternoon here on Public Media in Alaska's capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Swinomish Tribe announced this week its new oral health care program with plans to use mid-level dental health aid providers. Health officials say it will improve access to care, lower costs, and free up time for the dentist to address specialized needs. John Stevens is program administrator for the Washington Tribe.
We found that up until the tribe went self-governance in 1995, a huge portion of our population was experiencing tremendous oral health needs. Most people's experience with the dentists that were being provided by the Indian Health Service on a very part-time basis, like once a week and sometimes twice a month, people would only see those dentists literally to have teeth pulled.
Steven says much analysis show 50% of what dentists do can be done by dental health aid therapists. And at 50% of the cost. A dental health aid therapist can perform cavity fills and preventative care. Steven says they're also trained on health education, especially to work with children.
I always compare dental health aid therapists and how we can and should use them and will use them under our model. We compare them to physician's assistants and family nurse practitioners. And at Swinomish, we've had family nurse practitioners and physician's assistants for almost 40 years.
The Swinomish program is being done under tribal authority without Indian Health Service funding. Steven says IHS dentists serve twice as many people than the general population, one to about 3,000 patients compared to one for every 1,500. The Swinomish program is based on the Alaska Native model, which has used dental aids in communities for years. An enrolled Swinomish member is starting a two-year training program this month in Alaska and will come back to serve the Swinomish community. The dental health aid therapist program has been criticized by dental groups, but Steven says evidence disproves those fears, saying studies show the Alaska model has provided high-quality care comparable to dentists. The National Congress of American Indians wrapped up its mid-year conference in St. Paul, Minnesota this week. Here's reporter Melissa Townsend, who spoke with NCAI Executive Director Jacqueline Peta.
Peta says about 700 people from tribes all over the country were registered for the four-day conference. Speakers included Minnesota State Senators, Governor Mark Dayton, and local leaders. Kevin Washburn, Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs, also spoke.
This is a large convening of tribal leadership, so if you want to talk about key issues, this is the place to come.
Peta says Assistant Secretary Washburn talked with tribal leaders about a wide variety of issues with tribal land management and trust status.
We didn't get everything we wanted, and they let us, you know, let it clear what they can and can't do, and we'll continue to have those conversations. That's what relationships are all about.
Tribal delegates at this mid-year conference passed 58 new resolutions to guide NCAI's future work.
We have a lot of new resolutions that got passed that give us very clear direction in so many areas, water settlements and land entitlements, National Labor Relations Act and the changes we need there, you know, business functions of tribes. And that's what happens here at NCAI.
Besides the formal resolutions, Peta says a number of tribal leaders say they want to talk more about collaborating with state and local governments. For National Native News, I'm Melissa Townsend.
The Native American Rights Fund is ending its relationship with FedEx. In an email announcement Wednesday, NARF says it's long opposed the nickname of the Washington football team and is now taking the step of severing economic ties with the company, one of the team's major sponsors. Other Native groups across the country have also done the same. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at uttc.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it's Thursday, the 2nd of July. I'm Ben Brown, your host for a Juno afternoon, this lovely stereotype-reinforcing Juno afternoon. It is raining a little bit out, but it's going to be a very nice weekend, I think. And to talk with us first on a Juno afternoon today, we have Toby Harbinuck, who is going to have a First Friday exhibit opening across the street at the Jack tomorrow, combining photography and furniture. So, Toby, welcome to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you.
And tell us a little bit about photography and furniture and what people can expect at your opening tomorrow at the Jack.
Well, what I'm doing is I'm taking photography display to what I feel is the next level. Take picture. Normally when you display a photo, you frame it. But what I'm doing is building furniture that complements each photo in the way that the furniture is constructed. So with a frame that provides function or utility of some kind, like I have a room divider and I have some tables that you can use, put stuff on, but it's also really, really decorative.
Excellent. So I guess I maybe initially assumed that it might be photographs of furniture, but it's furniture that will have photographs in the pieces of furniture.
Exactly.
And now you're probably familiar, and I'm sure listeners are familiar, with those little glass coasters that you can put your photographs in. This takes that concept of putting your pictures into some other usable item to a whole new level. So what kind of furniture? There's a room divider and a table. Are there chairs or anything else like that?
There's several tables and a room divider and some other smaller stuff like coasters and cutting boards that some people are familiar with already. The table surfaces are the coasters and tiles that are just have multiple tiles with images spanned across them. So it's the same durable materials and stuff. I haven't found a way to do chairs yet because of buttons and keys scratching the surface.
Right.
But it is on my to-do list.
Right. Now, you've been a photographer for quite some time. Is this foray into the world of furniture something new and exciting for you?
It's insanely exciting. It's a whole new creative discipline to learn, basically. And that's another thing is I did all the construction, fabrication, design myself. So I'm basically teaching myself a new art form, which has been really enjoyable.
And was that difficult? Did you have any sort of mentors that you could rely on for furniture making here in town, or did you have other sources?
I glanced at YouTube once in a while. The biggest lesson is with furniture is 1/32nd of an inch. That's on the precision that you probably want to look for, which seems pretty tight, but it's very noticeable. And that was the biggest paradigm shift from because I've built stuff like outdoor things like decks and tree houses before, but cabinet making, which is the skill set that I'm exploring, takes you just got to be a little bit more dead on like that. So the short answer is 1/32nd of an inch.
Very good. Precision matters. Otherwise, the furniture won't fit together, and it might not stand the test of time. Now, how many pieces total are going to be in the exhibit tomorrow?
Four or five big ones and a bunch of little stuff to keep it interesting, too.
And are pieces available for sale?
Everything there will be for sale.
Outstanding. So a working artist hoping to continue to earn his living on some of the pieces that he's presenting to the public.
Absolutely. This will be a really good test of the concept, and I hope to get some awesome feedback from it.
Excellent. What time tomorrow will the exhibit open at the Jack?
4:30, and we'll probably be there until 8 or 9, if not later.
Right, because it's the confluence of First Friday and the eve before Independence Day, so it should be an exciting and busy time in downtown Juneau.
It's going to be an epic time in downtown Juneau.
Excellent. Well, everyone listening is encouraged to go and see Toby Harbinuck's new First Friday exhibit tomorrow with the Jack, Photography and Furniture. Toby, anything else you want to say to folks listening?
My stuff will be in there all month, so if you can't fit it in, there will be other opportunities, and I think the Jack is open Tuesday through Saturday.
Very good, and probably by appointment. You could probably call 586 Arts and ask Nancy to let you in if that didn't work for you. So, all right, well, thank you very much, Toby. Best of luck tomorrow, and thanks for joining us this afternoon on a Juno Afternoon.
Thank you, guys.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 2nd of July, 2015. It was on this day, 1679, Daniel Gracelin, Sieur de Lute, first reached Lake Superior, about where the city is that bears his name, Duluth. French soldier, explorer, he came to try to broker a peace agreement between the Sioux and the Ojibwe Indians so that the French could resume their fur trading there. And he did negotiate a peace treaty. He arranged some intertribal marriages and then headed west to explore the Mississippi and the St. Croix. 1698 on this day, the British engineer Thomas Savery patented the first steam engine. He was trying to find a way to pump water out of coal mines and eventually built this machine that itself was filled with water. When steam was introduced under pressure, the water level rose. It created a vacuum that would draw more water up through the valve below. It was Thomas Savery who came up with the term horsepower. It was on this day, 1937, Amelia Earhart was last heard from somewhere over the Pacific. She and her navigator, Fred Noonan, had set off in May from Miami to fly around the world in a Lockheed Electra. They'd completed all but about 7,000 miles of the trip, landed in New Guinea. There were U.S. Coast Guard ships in place to help guide them to their next stop, the tiny Howland Island. Weather cloudy, rainy when they left New Guinea. Earhart communicated to the Coast Guard cutter Itasca, "We must be on you, but we cannot see you. Fuel is running low. Been unable to reach you by radio. We're flying at 1,000 feet. Her last transmission about an hour later was, "We are running north and south." It's the birthday of Hermann Hesse, born in Calf, Germany, 1877. When he was in his 30s, he started studying Eastern religions, took a trip to India, and wrote his novel Siddhartha about the early life of the Gautama Buddha. Hermann Hesse, who said, "The world is not imperfect or slowly evolving along a path to perfection. No, it is perfect at every moment. Every sin already carries grace in it." Here's a poem for today by Freya Manfred entitled Imagine This. When you're young and in good health, you can imagine living in New York City or Nepal or in a tree beyond the moon. And who knows who you'll marry, a millionaire, a monkey, a sea captain, a clown. But the best imaginers are the old and wounded who swim through ever-narrowing choices, dedicating their hearts to peace, a stray cat, a bowl of homemade vegetable soup, or red mountain ash berries in the snow. Imagine this, only one leg, and lucky to have it, a jig-jagged jaunt with a cane along the shore, leaning on a walker to get from grocery to car, smoothing down the sidewalk on a magic moving chair, teaching every child you meet the true story of this sad, sweet, tragic 4th of July world. Imagine This, a poem by Freya Manfred from Speak, Mother, published by Red Dragonfly Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Writer's Almanac, also supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through online games, Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
My fellow Americans, it is I, George W. Bush. As you know, I've been lying low lately, just a man alone with his thought. But I want to encourage all Americans to listen to the Capitol Steps. You might even hear me suggest the GOP's best hope for the White House. He is ready. He's my brother. So kick back and listen to the Capitol Steps, 4th of July edition of Politics Takes a Holiday, on this public radio station.
Friday at 3 o'clock on KTOO News Juno.
And this is a Juno afternoon, Thursday, the 2nd of July. I'm Ben Brown, your host, and now I have with me Paul McGeed and Ann Gavser from the new Old Time Chautauqua. Welcome to Juno, and welcome to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you. Thanks for having us here.
So we were just discussing before we came back on the air that there's almost too much to talk about, but we're going to do our best because we're so excited to have the new Old Time Chautauqua here in Juno. You mentioned being in Wrangell. Where have you already been on this tour in Southeast?
So far, we've been to Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg, in that order, and it's just been fantastic. We really had a great reception. We've been selling out for our theater shows, had great workshop attendance. We've had wonderful potlucks. And we've also had a really good interactions with the Tlingit tribe all the way along.
Excellent. Excellent. And so three towns already, you're here, and then you have more to go. This is a pretty comprehensive Southeast tour that you all are doing.
Yeah, we're going to, from here we go to Hoonah, and then Haines, and then Sitka.
Excellent. Well, we hope your time here in the capital city is fun and pleasant, and we're hoping the weather is going to improve a little bit for you tomorrow. But we don't want it to be, you know, too dry, so we wanted to make sure we got some hydration going. So just go ahead, please, and tell us what you're most excited about in the next couple of days to be able to share with the residents of Juneau. Ann?
Well, we're really excited to be here, first of all, even though the weather is kind of, it's kind of wet and rainy. But it's been wonderful already. We've had community shows today. Community shows are one of the main things that we do as part of Chautauqua, where we go out and bring our form of entertainment and education to people that may not be able to get into the theater shows. So we've been in partnership with the Juno Libraries. We've been out to the Douglas Library, the Valley Library, and the Downtown Library already today. And that's one of my favorite things to do is these community shows. We've also been out to the Pioneer Home and the Johnson Youth Center.
Excellent.
From here, we're going out to Douglas this afternoon to do the Chautauqua Chalk Challenge. So everybody come out and bring your artistic selves and draw some pictures. And as we say in Chautauqua, everybody gets a trophy. So come on out. And then we're having a potluck and a community jam. And that's just what's going on today. And I'm sure Paul can say more about the future.
And that's over in Douglas, and that's just this afternoon. You're going to go straight from here over there. So anyone listening, don't write it down on your calendar. Just go over to Douglas and join
bring
in
some
the fun.
Food, though, for the potluck.
It is a potluck, so you want to bring some to share with your friends and neighbors.
That would be great.
And our wonderful guests. And so let's talk a little bit about tomorrow, Paul.
Right,
what's going on then?
Tomorrow's basically all around Centennial Hall. And what we're going to do tomorrow, we do a whole set of free workshops from 1 to 4 at Centennial Hall. And you can come and either go have a juggling workshop, learn how to juggle. You could learn how to walk a slack line, which is like a tightrope, but only, less severe, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn about the history of Chautauqua. I give a lecture on the history of Chautauqua. You can learn about the lymphatic system. If you want to go to that lecture, you can get your kid's face painted. You can there's a mask making workshop. Anyway, we provide with many, many workshops, but there are other workshops also being given by the community tomorrow. A woman named Florence, who teaches the Tlingit language, will be giving the Tlingit language workshop also during one of our sessions tomorrow. So anyway, it's the wonderful thing about Chautauqua is that, you know, this is an idea that's been around in America for a very long time. And it's not just entertainment. It's about education and entertainment. It's, you know, before there were TED Talks or NPR for that matter, there was the Chautauqua. And the format for the TED Talk or NPR comes right out of the Chautauqua. So if you want to come and see kind of be part of and experience that sort of great American idea of learning and having fun while doing so, come to our workshops tomorrow from 1 to 4.
And there's no pre-registration requirement.
Nope.
People can just show up, and there's also no fee. You are very generously.
Absolutely free.
Okay. Absolutely free. It's part of what we do.
Excellent.
And then tomorrow, we're doing a benefit for some radio station. I can't remember. but I can't mention that. And we're doing a show at Centennial Hall starting at 7 o'clock. And the show is just going to be fantastic. We have, of course, our marching band, which is the Fighting Instruments of Karma Marching Chamber Band / Orchestra. And then we also have a group that was here in March about a year and a half ago called the Flying Karamazov Brothers. Ho!
Uh-huh.
I'm a member of that group. So if you will be doing part of the show. And we also have, I'll be also emceeing the show. I'm Dmitry Karamazov in another life. And also emceeing with me is a woman named Amy Engelhart, who is part of the Bob's a cappella group, who've also been to Juno several times. She's quite a wonderful actress. And we have many, many other acts. We have a great comic hula hoop act done by a guy named Ty Venowitz. We have a great magician named Joey Pipia, who hails from New York via Port Townsend. And we have... we also have a choir, which is a community choir, so which is to say there's members of the Chautauqua who are singing in the choir, but there are also members from the Juno community who will be in the choir singing on stage at Centennial Hall. And we also have in our band people from the Juno marching band who will be in our show. And so anyway, the show is selling out, like right now, as we speak, the show is selling out. So if you really want to get a ticket and you want to see this amazing, wonderful, huge vaudeville show with about 50 people in it, which just, you know, can't really ever happen in a place like Juno because it's hard to get transport for that kind of numbers for that many people, you got to come down to Centennial Hall and buy your ticket. I think you can buy tickets at the Arts and Humanities Council and at...
Hardside Books has
Hardside
tickets.
Books, yeah,
I
right.
think they can be bought online through Vendini, which is the Juno Arts and Humanities Council online service.
Right.
And when I spoke with Natalie the other day, she was on the show on Monday afternoon, Natalie Rothaus,
mm-hmm.
She wasn't really sure how many people were going to be coming to the show. They had sold 300 tickets at the time, but if the sales have continued briskly, I would encourage...
It's way past 700 now, and I think they're going to try to add, you know, another couple hundred tickets to it, but, I mean, we're getting down to that.
And after a certain point, the fire marshal cannot just look the other way, and the place will, in fact, be sold out. So if you want to go get your tickets now, have one in hand, and that's the
best
way.
And it's a great thing to do before the fireworks.
Absolutely.
So if you're, like, looking for a thing to do, this is, like, loads of fun. You'll get all jacked up, and then you go out to the fireworks and just have a great time.
Outstanding.
And then do you want to talk about the next day?
I sure do. I mean, no rest for the weary, but then after the fireworks tomorrow night, we wake up on Saturday morning, and it's supposed to be kind of nice, partly cloudy, which means partly sunny. And what's happening on Independence Day with the new old-time Chautauqua?
Well, I hear there's a parade in Juno
on the
4th of July. Well, we're joining up with the Juno Marching Band, and we're making a mega marching band. So our 25-piece band is joining with their 25-piece band, and we're going to make a 50-piece or so band, and we're just going to have the greatest time. And we have, you know, of course, all the people that march with us from our group, which will be, you know, there's stilt walkers, and there's people holding signs, and, you know, all sorts of wonderfully dressed and colorful folks. So we're really excited about marching with the band. And we'll be doing that here in Juneau and then also over there in Douglas. And then later in the afternoon at 5, we have a band concert at the band shell. Very Chautauqua-like event.
Mm-hmm.
And then that'll be how we close out our Chautauqua stay here in Juneau.
That sounds outstanding. And so, again, they're going to be in the Juno Parade at 11, the Douglas Parade, which I believe starts
two.
At 2,
mm-hmm.
The concert over at Savico Park will be at 5, and then after that you're all going to collapse in a heap and take 3 deep breaths, and then when do you go on to Huna?
Well, we're going to take a day off here in Juno on the 5th, and then because of the ferry schedule changed, as it does these days a lot,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to go on the 6th to Huna, and then we're going to be in Huna doing shows there on... the 8th of July, we do our big show at the Huna School's gym, and we're also doing a potluck and a presentation to the tribe, and we are also doing our workshops. The whole Chautauqua shebang will be there. And then we go on the 10th to Haines, and we'll be in Haines doing shows, the workshop, the parade, and the shows on the 10th. And then on the 12th, we do that all again in Sitka, And then we spend a day also with the tribe on the 13th, the Sitka Tribe of Alaska, doing a big potluck, also a community potluck in the tribal house.
Outstanding. And I do know that when Natalie was here the other day, she mentioned that the Alaska Marine Highway System was very, very accommodating and helpful in putting your visit together. And it wouldn't have been possible without some support from the Marine Highway.
Absolutely.
So
they gave
thanks
us
to
a
them.
Big, big discount. And thank God that they did, because otherwise, yeah, you're right. It would be impossible to do it.
Now, Natalie brought the old-time Chautauqua to Juneau way back in the early 1990s. Were either of you part of that visit back then?
Yeah, I'm the one who booked it with Natalie. And
I love it.
I also worked with George Reifenstein, who's been instrumental in bringing us back this time. In fact, it was our conversation after the Karamazov show in March of a year and a half ago. The three of us got together and we were like, oh, wouldn't it be great to have the Chautauqua back up here in Southeast? Well, let's do it. So basically, we've been working sort of tirelessly ever since then to make that happen. And it's been a lot of work, you know, because there's a lot of places and having to, you know, work out everything with the ferry schedule and all that. And getting people to, you know, one of the things about the Chautauqua is we're a nonprofit organization and we're an all volunteer group. Nobody gets paid. So to get people, you know, that caliber here and on tour for a month for free is just, you know, it's great. In fact, we had so many applications that we had to turn away a lot of people for, you know, applications to come up for people who wanted to be on the Chautauqua.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I was going to ask you how that works. Where do you live when you're not traveling the country dispensing merriment to people and education?
I live in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us are Pacific Northwest based, Seattle, Bellingham, Port Townsend, and Oregon and California. And other people come in from all over to join us for this little period of time.
And what do you have any other, after your Alaskan adventure, which is pretty amazing adventure, do you have any other travel, any other places around the country for the rest of the year planned?
Well, we do benefits throughout the year, so we'll be, you know, doing shows probably in the Northwest somewhere to pay for all of this, because actually, we charge so little for what we do, because we do it as a community service. We're kind of a catalyst for community. We kind of do it as a, you know, as almost, you know, a thing that we give back for all the work we do all year long. And but we run our bank account to zero, so we have to, like, do benefits all year long to pay for the next year. And next year we already kind of have that going, which is a collaboration with the Washington State Parks. And we are going to be going around to Washington State Parks and kind of bringing the communities that are near them back to finding out what they're local state park is all about. So
right.
That should be really exciting too.
And that's something in Alaska that our Division of Parks, Natural Recreation is starting to partner more with our State Arts Council and trying to find ways to infuse the arts into outdoor recreational opportunities. So that's exciting that you're doing that. And maybe some listeners here in Juneau will be in Washington next summer and they'll be able to see you all once again. So if people want to learn more about New Old Time Chautauqua as an organization, where's a website they could go to do that?
That is www.chautauqua.org. And let me spell it for you because it's a little confusing. It's Chautauqua. www.chautauqua.org.
Excellent. And, of course, listeners, once again, if you want to get tickets to the Vaudeville show tomorrow night, don't delay. Go to Vendini on the JAHC.org website right now or go to Hearthside Books and get those tickets before they sell out. I want to thank Paul McGee and Ann Gavser for joining us here on a Juneau afternoon today and wish you all the best for the remainder of your time in Juneau and in Southeast. And thank you for all you do and for spreading so much joy into people's lives.
Well, thank you so much, Ben.
Thanks for having us.
Yep.
This is Bird Note, a frantic cacophony of loud, rapid bird calls tells other birds nearby there's a predator on the prowl. Mobbing, it's called, as birds clamor and dart back and forth at the threat. An ongoing study of mobbing and other bird warning behavior now suggests that some birds listen in on the warnings of other birds. A wave of warning calls spreads from one hillside to another at more than 100 miles per hour. So vulnerable birds may be clued into a predator's movements before it comes near, giving them time to take cover. Even chipmunks and some squirrels seem to pay heed to the bird's red alert. The predator's size might also be coded in the bird's alarm calls. Chickadees announce an urgent alarm for a small, agile pygmy owl. That's a major threat to them. You'd think an eagle would cause a louder alarm, but no. Birds of prey are the greatest threat to other birds of similar size because they can best match them in a chase. So for the chickadee, the eagle prompts something much more like a polite yawn. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
On the next reveal, a doctor who has to act like a detective just to treat his patients.
They were careful encounters, always sworn to secrecy.
Tracking down the trade secrets behind sick workers at the most innovative high-tech companies in the world. That's on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Tune in this Thursday at 7 for the premiere of Reveal.
It's 30 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown, your host on a Juno afternoon this lovely Thursday, the 2nd of July. And next up this afternoon, Elizabeth Jenkins is going to share a preview of a new monthly radio program called Reveal. So, Elizabeth, why don't you reveal some information about this program?
Hi, how's it going?
Very good. How are you doing this
afternoon? So, to give you some background about Reveal, they're with the Center for Investigative Reporting, and you've probably heard that name before, right? It's the investigative entity that's been around since the 70s. They're award-winning. What they're doing with Reveal is they want to create something that's more conversational. So it's kind of like This American Life a little bit in the way that you're kind of being able to learn about these issues by engaging with characters. There's even sound design, like Radiolab, and they have a really cool host named Al Letson. Have you heard of him?
No, Al Letson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Al Letson, he's a playwright. He's a slam poet. He's also the host of another podcast called The State of the Reunion, and he's the one who is the host of Reveal. So, yeah, it's a really fun show to listen to about serious topics.
And who is producing Reveal? Where does this come from?
Comes from California. I believe right now they're doing something in San Francisco. That's where it's being produced. And they have a team, but they work with independents like myself. So I worked on an episode called Law and Disorder.
Uh-huh.
I did a third segment. I produced it with the Seattle Times. So they're open to working with independents, but they also have an established team. I know they have Laura Starczewski. She works on there. She also did some stuff for State of the Reunion. She might have done some stuff for This American Life. So they're really trying to bring on people who can tell audio stories.
And when will the first installation of Reveal be on the air here?
Very soon, today, right?
Very soon, at 7:30? 7 o'clock this evening. 7 o'clock this evening. I'm sorry, I can't count that quickly. So, yeah, if you're interested, this teaser is not going to make you wait for very long. 7 o'clock tonight, you can listen to Reveal on KTOO, and then it'll repeat. It'll be a new show every month after that?
Yeah, they have a huge catalog right now that they're building up. It's kind of like This American Life in that it's in segments. There's 3 segments to listen to an episode, and I think my piece is somewhere in there, so if you keep listening a couple weeks in, you might hear my voice, too.
Excellent. So, well, Elizabeth, this sounds like an exciting new addition to the lineup here in public media in Alaska's capital city. Anything else that listeners should know, or should they just tune in at 7 o'clock tonight and catch that first episode?
They should tune in. They should also check out Al Letson. He's a really cool guy with a bunch of interesting material out there.
And that's L-E-T-Z-E-N?
L-E-T-S-O-N.
L-E-T-S-O-N. Oh, well, my phonetic guess didn't work. Al Letson, L-E-T-S-O-N. You can Google him. You can find out more about him. And you can listen to Reveal on KTOO starting at 7 o'clock tonight. Thank you very much, Elizabeth, for the information.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Very good. 35 minutes after the hour, Ben Brown here on a Juno afternoon. I wanted to let you all know that KTOO.org will be featuring special live coverage of 4th of July festivities through the weekend. Matt Miller, your Morning Edition host, will be aboard the fireworks barge tomorrow night when the show begins, and you can watch a live video stream. Fireworks, of course, are scheduled to begin at 11:59 p.m., and we're also going to be crowdsourcing photographs of festivities through Instagram. So you can tag your Independence Day photos with hashtag Juno4th, that's the Arabic numeral 4th, to share. Hashtag Juno, the numeral 4th. So get involved. Don't be a passive participant, but be actively involved in Independence Day this weekend. Next this afternoon, we're going to speak to Amy Kittelstrom, who has written a book called The Religion of Democracy, Seven Liberals in the American Moral Tradition. I have a copy of it in front of me right here. Welcome to Juno, Amy, and can you tell us about your book and what gave you the idea to write this?
Thank you for having me. The book is the history of the idea that we should treat one another as equals who deserve to be free, an idea that actually predates the revolution and helps inform the political ideas that shape American democracy. And the idea came long before I could explain it that way, simply with an observation that there was a way of thinking about religion after the Civil War by this philosopher, William James, that was not Christian, but was quite earnest. And so I thought it was a pretty modest question of what kind of religion was this. And when I was working on the dissertation that was the base of this book, I felt like I answered that question pretty well. And then when I was turning it into a book, then it was, where did it come from? I went looking for it among the Transcendentalists and found that they had borrowed some ideas from people who were Christians, and those people had inherited that from 18th century thinkers. And so it was really an excavation project that took a long time to fully bring up.
You mentioned William James, and you describe him as the most important American philosopher in the book, I think, at one point. It's not a name with which I was previously familiar, and I did take philosophy as an undergraduate, but that was a long time ago. Tell people about William James and why he's so important in the American philosophical tradition.
Yeah, it's almost difficult for me to admit how much time I've spent studying this elite, white male thinker from the 19th century, but he helped make the transition from traditional ways of thinking to modern ways of thinking, to bring European ideas into the American context and to bridge academic with popular. So I think one reason you may not have encountered him in university is that a lot of those have gone into analytical philosophy that's very technical and so on. He still had maybe the people's touch would be a word for it. And he spent most of his career at Harvard at a time when intellectuals weren't necessarily in the university at all. And his approach to philosophy helped answer for me questions I had about how can we hold a belief sincerely and at the same time sincerely respect someone who holds a different belief. So this we call pluralism.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have an ism to define it, but I think it's important for a democracy that we know how to function in diversity and still maintain some universal commitments. And so that's, I think, part of why he's so important.
So when people, I guess, to kind of rephrase it, having your own deeply held beliefs, whether they're religious or political, isn't a zero-sum game. That doesn't deny other people the right to have perhaps opposing or completely incongruous deeply held personal beliefs, whether they're religious or political. Everyone has the right to do that, and we should all embrace everyone's right to be able to do that.
That's exactly right. And when we hold our beliefs, we should do so with some humility, remembering that we don't know everything. We don't have a direct line to God. No one else does either. So if we encounter someone with whom we disagree, instead of just trying to beat them over the head and make them agree with us, actually to listen to where they're coming from and what has shaped their value system and their judgments and so on.
Well, and from the title of the book, when Jeff first mentioned it to me, The Religion of Democracy, Seven Liberals in the American Moral Tradition, I'm sure that there are some conservative talk radio hosts out there who just the title of the book alone might set their tongues a-wagging and get their ire up. But looking at the book and looking at the seven individuals that you've discussed the lives of and the importance that they've contributed to America's philosophical history and our culture, it isn't really liberal in that alarming sense, and it's really not about secular humanism being a religion. So have you had responses of the kind I'm sort of guessing might come from certain kinds of people?
Not yet, but I'm looking forward to engaging with those people if it comes up, because I think that the polarized atmosphere we have of so-called conservatives versus so-called liberals really blocks progress. And actually, we need dialogue across of that. And so these I call them liberals because they called themselves liberals. But what they meant by that was actually a religious commitment to being open-minded and including people of a whole range of beliefs. And so you can't take current politics and import them back into the past and find people who represent today's political positions. Instead, you find people who some people say they were conservatives in their time, but what they were interested in most of all was progress, human progress together by cooperation.
And so it sounds to me like, you've definitely embraced the idea that you want to tolerate other people even when they're intolerant to a certain extent, because you have to, otherwise you are denying them the right to hold their beliefs.
Yeah, of course, this is the sticky question, right? So toleration is, I'll permit you to exist and you can say what you think even though I don't like it. Pluralism goes one more step and says, let's engage, let's talk, let me hear what you think. But it only works if both parties agree to the same rules of engagement, if it's reciprocal, if the listening goes both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a way, you can be liberal in the sense I mean and believe a whole set of political opinions that match today's conservative agendas if you're willing to listen to the other side. Or you could be today's so-called liberal and actually be close-minded, right? Mm-hmm. And so I would like to see people on all different political positions agree to have a conversation.
And then certainly that is there's so many things going on in our country and in our state, but more nationally we can think of right now that underscore sort of the validity of the observations that you've made. So you are going to be doing a book signing?
Yes.
And when and where will that be?
Yeah, can I get help from Mark Wheeler?
Actually, I think I may have it right here. I think it's going to be today at 5:30 at the downtown library.
That's the talk.
Yeah, so there are two.
Okay,
right?
Here we go. Tomorrow, first Friday, the downtown Hearthside book. Mark Wheeler is here in the studio. I take full blame for not acknowledging his presence. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hello.
And so if you want to be our lifeline here and help tell Amy and me and everyone listening where she's going to be talking and signing books, that'd be great.
I'll take credit being a producer for Amy's visit here at the Juno. It's so great to have her here. She will be at the downtown library at 5:30 tonight giving a talk about her book and answering questions and then being available to sign books. They'll be available for purchase. And I want to thank the Friends of the Juno Public Libraries for bringing her up here. Then we'll have rhubarb sherbet from COPA afterwards.
I knew there was going to be a delicious treat involved somehow.
Maybe some snickerdoodles. That's pretty American, right? Snickerdoodles?
Oh, yeah.
And tomorrow should be at Hearthside Books for First Friday from 4 to 7, doing a book signing there at the shop downtown.
Excellent. Thank you, Mark. And Amy, it sounds like this is going to be an interesting time in Juno for you. So thank you so much for being here. Are you going to get to stay through the rest of the Independence Day weekend?
Yes. Well, Independence Day, Mark told me it's fabulous here, and I have two kids I brought along, and so we're going to enjoy Juno.
Excellent. Well, I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you for writing this book and for coming on a Juno afternoon and talking about it a little bit. And again, you can hear her talk today at the downtown library at 5:30. And there will be a presentation. And tomorrow she'll be signing books at Hearthside Books during First Friday, so try to catch her at both things. Thank you very much, Amy, and thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
And it's 16 minutes before the hour. Ben Brown here, a Juno afternoon. And that clinking glass you hear is the telltale sign that Andy Klein is loose in the studio.
Oh, no.
Yes, he is. And he's not hosting a Juno afternoon.
Not in my brewery
today.
Capacity, yes.
That's right. And in fact, we knew we were going to have so much fun this afternoon, we canceled the Juno afternoon for tomorrow. So there will be no afternoon tomorrow. It's going to go from morning into evening directly.
That's all that's going to happen. But, you know, we want that to happen on the 3rd. We want to get to the fireworks.
That's
quickly.
Right. It's just a haze of merriment and patriotism and all those things. So Imperial IPA, it's a new beer from Alaskan Brewing Company. We love it when there's a new beer from
Alaska.
We
got so much going on at Alaskan Brewing right now. I mean, we got this Imperial IPA. It just came out yesterday, so we thought we'd come in here, taste a little bit. Are you good with that, Ben?
I think that sounds like a very wise idea. I'm a little parched. You know, I've had several guests on. I'm getting a little
sphincter in my gazazoid. You know, well, the other thing I wanted to mention, too, is because First Friday is happening tomorrow as well, so we got a big event happening down at the Depot. Come on by. We'll have some of this on tap. We'll also have some other beers on tap for First Friday. Always a blast down there. Of course, hit all the shops on First Friday. And kind of a nice little bit of a warm-up for then the later festivities that happen as we go on. So check out First Friday tomorrow. And then as this comes in, Raspberry Wheat goes out. So the very last of the cases of Raspberry Wheat are available at the gift shop right now.
So if you want to buy those.
If you want to
hoard some Raspberry Wheat, now is a good time to do
head
it.
Head on out to the brewery and the gift shop there. And I'm going to...
While you're pouring that delicious IPA, remember, Andy, I told you I had one bottle of Alaskan Pale left in my fridge, and you said don't drink it because it was too old. Somebody was at my house while I was out of town, and she drank it. So she lived, so anyhow, it wasn't that bad.
It won't kill you. Just not going to – listen to that. It's just not going to taste terrific.
That's right. So that's the sound of an Imperial IPA being poured into a charming Alaskan Brewing Company glass.
So this, as you smell this beer is all about a celebration of hops. There's there's specific Yakima Valley hop varieties, Simcoe and Mosaic specifically. There's another great one called Citra that we use in our free ride, and we use in hopothermia as well. And they're all really interesting because they were all, in part, developed by one guy. Jason Peralt is this rock star hop grower, and he is making these amazing hops that are really kind of becoming the backbone of the explosion of the Pacific Northwest and California craft beer explosion. So, for instance, Lagunitas uses Simcoe and Mosaic hops in a lot of their beers. And we were able to buy some. They're really hard to buy because these other breweries buy them all out. So we were able to buy some of that Simcoe and Mosaic, and we made our Big Mountain Pale Ale out of it.
Right.
Which was a really delicious and fast-selling seasonal.
And that was? It's out? It's
that's
gone?
That's gone. That was our spring seasonal.
So I should have hoarded the cases of that
definitely.
From Costco?
Yeah.
Damn it,
yeah.
Man. You've got to test me these things.
I know, man.
I was loving the Big Mountain. It was filling the void in my heart left by the going away of Pale.
Well, if you love the Big Mountain, this is what we're kind of internally calling Bigger Mountain. This is a Imperial version of the Big Mountain, essentially. It's got a lot of the same hop characteristics and malt characteristics. It's a higher alcohol content, so 8.5%. It's a pilot series. It comes only in the 22-ounce bombers that people kind of buy like a bottle of wine, buy it to share with your friends, you know?
Mm-hmm. They're
the
not
idea
just for
there.
Paper bags on park benches anymore.
That's right. That's
They're
right.
not.
We're moving beyond that. Much classier.
Well, it's very tasty, and it's not too hoppy. I think sometimes IPAs, you know, it smacks you upside the head, but I think this is very drinkable and delicious. And so this has been made. It's a seasonal. It's temporary. Now is the time to come and get as many bottles as humanly possible.
Absolutely right. It just came out this week. Just came out yesterday. In fact, July 1st is when it was released. Our next pilot series comes out in October, so you've got summer to collect and get this pilot series. It'll keep for a while because of the higher ABV, so you get a case or two and keep it around if you really like it.
Excellent. Well, I will have to say, and I'm probably not the first person ever to say this, those are some hip hops.
Hip hops, man.
They're
delicious. Absolutely.
Well, Andy Klein, thank you so much for all you do, especially in the context of bringing beer to a Juno afternoon. You can't do it when you're the host.
No, not really.
The Imperial IPA, you can try it tomorrow at the Alaskan Brewing Depot during the first Friday. Are there also things going on at the new location in the hangar?
Nothing going on there for First Friday.
Okay.
No tastings and stuff like that.
So just go to the main depot in South Franklin Street.
Yeah, but the outpost, it's fun. Have you been over by there?
I haven't. I'm just aware that
it's
open.
Pretty cool happening there in the wharf.
Okay, well, again, we've got one more guest on, so I'm going to rush you out the door.
Nancy's coming up, I know.
Thanks, Andy Klein. Thank you, Alaskan Brewing, and we'll be right back with Arts Up.
Attention, this is an airport announcement. All incoming international passengers, please report to security checkpoints for a full body probing.
Never saw a line move slower, but everybody's had a fright. Now we're hearing from Obama that you will not get off your flight if you've got fever. It's a warning, I'm moving at a glacial pace. Fever! I left one glove in someone, now my supervisor's on my case. Everybody fears Ebola, that's why you must remove your shoes. Did you know you can get symptoms from too much contact with Fox News? It gives you fever just from watching fever as this pox takes root. Fever! We suggest you watch news in a hazmat suit. Here is something to consider when dealing with the bug that stealth. The folks who steal your bottled water are now in charge of global health.
And 10 minutes before the hour, that was just a teaser from the Capitol Steps. Again, tomorrow afternoon, there will not be a Juno afternoon in its normal iteration with Andy Klein. You'll get to hear Mock the Vote from the Capitol Steps. So above and beyond that, Nancy DeCherney, Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Arts up, Nancy.
Arts up, Ben. Hey, and the good news is you get to listen to Mock the Vote tomorrow, and then they're coming in January.
Outstanding.
Outstanding.
Now, when they come in January, will that be after session begins or before?
After session on the 29th.
Very, very wise.
Yeah, so you're going to want to get your tickets for that right
away. Hold on. The 29th is...
It's a Sunday, I think.
It's a Sunday. I'm not going to look at my calendar. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't the same night as the Governor's Awards for the Arts and Humanities. There's no way we could have double-booked that, I'm quite sure, but we'll double-check.
We've been known to do things
That's
like
right.
that. Anyway.
So much going on. Let's go ahead and tell folks.
Okay, so right now, over at the Jack, it's craziness because the new old-time Chautauqua folks are embedded in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just expanded the ticket count for the show tomorrow. It's excitement everywhere. So that's what's going on. You need to get your tickets for the Chautauqua and go over for that. But let's just take it from the top. There's from 1 to 4. There's free workshops over at Centennial Hall. I don't even know the entire list. That's tomorrow. Then there is First Friday.
Yep.
And that there's photography-infused furniture by Toby Harbinek at the Jack. You want to stop there and get your little map. It's not a big map this time, but it has stuff in it that you need to know. We are, of course, having Food Truck Friday. We will have the Juno Concert Marching Band performing for Food Truck Friday, as well as all the other stuff. It's all going to be on the lawn,
mm-hmm.
and so the weather's going to be fabulous.
Well, I think it is going to get nice going after tonight, so I think I'm with you on the weather.
Yeah, we're there on that. There's the Seaglove Friday Night Social over at the Imperial Saloon. There's a community picnic at Sandy Beach, which is sponsored by the Juno Volunteer Fire Department. It says here the Colunteers, but we know it means volunteers. That's from 6 to 8 p.m. Over at the beach. There's the Soapbox Challenge. The start of the heats is happening. I mean, there's just so much going on because it's 4th of July.
It is. It's First Friday, 4th of July, and so that's crazy. So if people want to go look at an actual listing of all this, is it on the JAHC website?
It is. Go there, and you can get all the details. Let's see. There's the 3rd Annual Saxophone Showcase on Friday night. There's Traveler Trio Live at Rockwell. There's Dan Hobson. There's pre-fireworks barn dancing. There, you know, you just go outside and you'll be busy.
I'm Barack the Lowry Chef. You've got so much going on. What are your big plans for the weekend, Nancy?
Well, of course, I have to be there. And then on Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we're having pancakes.
The Flapjacks,
yes. Patriotic pancakes. Come on down, blueberries, strawberries, whipped cream. You need them in order to get going. And then there's all the other things, sandcastles and parades and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's just an exciting weekend.
Very good. Well, thank you for all that you do for the capital city, Nancy.
Well, thank you. It's been great chatting with you.
You as well. And so that's Arts Up for this Thursday afternoon. But if you do have more questions, go to jahc.org and figure out what you want to do this weekend. Thanks again, Nancy DeCherney.
Thank you.
And it's about 6 minutes before the hour. Ben Brown here at the end of a Juneau afternoon. The weather forecast from our friends at the National Weather Service. The forecast for this evening is for showers, diminishing and becoming scattered later on, a low around 52 degrees. South winds 15 to 25 miles per hour, and those are going to be diminishing to 10 to 20 miles per hour later. Higher gusts, however, in the evening. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, scattered showers are high around 64 degrees. Southwest wind from 10 miles per hour shifting to the northwest in the afternoon. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, a low to from 48 to 54. Partly cloudy, perfect backdrop for those fireworks tomorrow just before midnight. And on Saturday, Independence Day, partly cloudy with a high around 65. I think that means it's going to be more than just partly sunny. It's going to be significantly sunny. Saturday night, a bit more cloudy conditions with a low from 51 to 57. And then partly cloudy again on Sunday and mostly clear on Monday and Tuesday going into next week. So some lovely weather here in Alaska's capital city. Tomorrow, you will be looking forward to listening to some great things here on the air. And in lieu of a Juneau afternoon tomorrow, you will be hearing Mock the Boat from the Capitol Steps. So that is what I can tell you this Juneau afternoon. Ben Brown, thanks very much for listening. And best wishes for a lovely Independence Day weekend.